time, air time, and alcohol. Air time. Okay. We're recording, I guess. I'm also a box troll. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what that is, you should take your family to go see it. It's a great claymation that's out. And so I'm fish, and that is egg. yeah, so thanks for coming in on Halloween night when you could be trick-or-treating or passing out candy, I guess. So a lot of you I know from the sixth grade meeting, well, a handful, I guess, so it already just feels like family. Hmm. This clubhouse specifically feels like home. I live kind of up the street, off and on, in and out of sobriety. That 6:30 a.m. meeting was one that I would pull myself out of bed and get there. I would be physically present, but kind of half asleep, but I would just feel safe starting my day like that. What's important to let you know is I have a sponsor, and I'm working the steps with my sponsor. and unfortunately, I do not have a home group at the moment. As of 2 weeks ago, I started class, so I'm searching for that home group, and I think I found one. Haven't made it official yet. So I'll touch on the importance of that and how that has really helped me stay steady in my recovery. But so first, I'll share about what it was like. Then we'll try to get to the solution. So I'm 26 years old, and I was born in Anaheim, California. My dad is a suffering alcoholic. He's slowly dying of this disease today. My mother is amazing. She recently has been looking at Al-Anon sort of literature, so there's much hope for that. So growing up, I saw that drinking devastated my family, and I was certain I would never drink like that. And I didn't have much interest in drinking for most of my childhood, up until I think it was age 14. I had relocated to Illinois and was desperate to be known and to feel like I belong. I also had what I did not know, the disease of alcoholism crawling underneath my skin. So my first drink, it was a beer that I was supposed to be splitting with a friend, but she had a sip and I just chugged the rest and attempted to drink everything else that was in her parents' home. And that was actually on Halloween night, now that I remember. All the girls that came over didn't drink, so they were just thinking, you're acting so weird. And then the next one, I was invited to like my first party, and I was offered a shot of tequila, and I wanted to steal the bottle. I wanted to drink as much as possible, and I had to be carried out of the party. I don't really remember much of that night, but I did want to do it again the next weekend. And so that was at age 14, and I was pretty active in sports, and really dedicated year-round to school and sports, A and B student, and then so the drinking kind of went away. The partying wasn't really a factor through some of high school. But then junior year, I just got absorbed into a crowd of really hard partiers. And I loved having that pride that I can drink like you guys. I loved that reputation of being the wild one. So eventually, by senior year, I dropped out of sports. I barely graduated high school. That last semester of high school, I went, the first semester of senior year, I still had A's and B's. The second semester, nearly failing in all my classes. And everyone's, making their plans to go away to college. I was making my plans for getting wasted that night and not going up to school anymore. I graduated and continued the drinking heavily up until age 19. It really became a necessity. And the summer before I turned 19, for 3 months every day, I didn't really want to carry on with living. I would wake up every morning swearing I would not drink that night, and I would always end up having to numb. It was a necessity. So I became supremely isolated and drinking just to feel normal. And I decided I didn't want to live this life anymore. Not like this, not this miserable, I could hardly function. So I decided to buy a ton of drugs and attempt to overdose to end my life. And I attempted it, and I'm still alive. That was the week after my 19th birthday. And so I was put in a psych ward to kind of keep an eye on me and get me on meds and kind of detox. And that's when I was given my first big book, also a 12x12. And it was given to me by a woman who I believe was drinking at the time. I mean, she was dating my alcoholic father, and I remember that she would drink with him. But, I was just looking at my 12x12 the other day, and she wrote on the inside cover saying, this really, I know how you feel, that you feel alone, that nobody understands what you're going through. I've been there, and this really helped me through that time. Because when she was a teenager, she got suicidal, and in the big book she wrote, I know you're not an alcoholic, but this might help you. It helped me. And I don't remember reading the literature. I think I looked at that word, that sentence, I'm not really an alcoholic. So then I just kind of then I don't need it. I don't need to read it. I'm not an alcoholic. But I talked to that woman every day for a month. After a psych ward, I got out, and that was the first time I had real connection with the human, and I don't know if she was sober or not, but I had this daily check-in with her, basically just to express what was going on. I remember the first time I, made a friend at school in that period. I was so extremely socially, withdrawn and not able to communicate with other people, that it excited me to talk to my classmate next to me. it was like sign of growth. And but I wasn't in AA, and I wasn't in the fellowship. I didn't have recovery. I didn't know what recovery was. I had a therapist. I had medication. I had a faith in a higher power. I left that out. Whoops. When I tried to kill myself, when I came to, I realized I was alive, and that was a miracle. And it occurred to me that God must be real, and God must actually care about me, that I'm still breathing and alive on this earth. There must be a reason. There must be a purpose. So a seed of hope got planted in me that day, that I'm on this earth for a reason. And that kind of fueled my sobriety. It was more like dryness for a good month after the psych ward. I ended up going to a party to see my old friends, and I wanted to share with them, I've got God in my life, and I don't drink anymore. I wanted to share that new life with them, but I had no real support. I was on my own. And on the way to that party, I had such anxiety, my hands were shaking, and I knew a couple of shots of vodka would take the edge off, and I'd be all right, and I'd be able to relax and talk to people. So I did that, on my way to the party to share how this new life was so great. And I think that's all I had that night, but it was a few more the next night. Total binge the next weekend, back into blackout drinking, reckless, jumping out of moving cars and stealing cars and escaping who knows what, always thinking that my friends and loved ones were trying to trap me and hold me down. I was always just trying to get away so I can go party like I wanted to, and it really snowballed into even heavier drinking than before. So somehow I wound up in outpatient treatment. I think I had I'm still 19. I had been given this ultimatum, and I chose the lesser of the severe, so I did outpatient, and that's when I got introduced to AA, because I was told, go to meetings, get a sponsor, do this homework, and I wasn't taking it seriously the first week, and I was doing some homework from the class, and I was not sober when I was doing this homework, and I had this moment of clarity, who am I fooling? I'm just lying to myself. I was trying to answer these questions so honestly, yet I wasn't even trying to stop. And that's when I started taking the suggestions by my counselor more seriously. I got a sponsor, started going to AA very regularly. Started working the steps in a way. Didn't complete them. I became my own sponsor after a while. I stayed sober technically for 4 years, but those last 2 years were dry and painful and lonely. And I was crawling out of my skin again, irritable and wanting to die sober. Dry. And that's when I arrived in Madison, in that very dark state of mind. And I couldn't understand it. It didn't occur to me, hey, why don't you try AA again? But it did occur to me that drinking would at least temporarily take this pain away. And I know I'm an alcoholic, but at least it would be better than this emotional agony and state of doom. So I just went full on back in. And I could not get, like, it took a good month of pulling into the parking lot and not coming in, or like coming in for half a meeting, and then like leaving. Like, I could not imagine life without alcohol, or with alcohol. I was in quite the pickle. And Christmas Eve, I showed up at a meeting at 5:11. There were three other women there, and I was pretty desperate. And so I got one of their numbers, and eventually, when I was ready, I called her, and she became my sponsor. And we kind of worked the steps. She didn't have a phone, and I kind of liked that. So I could still kind of be my sponsor, my own sponsor. So that lasted for, I don't know, 7 months maybe. I felt great, like, you know, the young people here in recovery are, like, on fire, and maybe I'll go try this out west. Like, I can probably do this again and, like, get rerouted and, like, do AA out west. So I went kind of aimlessly, not really having a plan or direction, just, I'm going to go find a new home out west. I didn't realize I was totally running again. So I spent some dry months traveling, and I was handed a beer, and I thought, you know, I missed out on a lot of good years of drinking. You know, I was sober from 19 to 23, and those are like prime drinking years. And there's a lot of certain microbrews I have not tried yet. So that night I proceeded to try as many different kinds as possible until that fridge was empty at that party. And that launched me into another bender where I woke up in some strange place and did not know what happened. So that was my last drink, and that was a little over 2 years ago, and I started going to meetings right away after that last bender. Did a lot of crying, no talking. I would come like just before the meeting start, and I would dip out when it was finished. That prayer felt so long. Finish already. So I got to go over your hand. And that was still out west. So I did that for a month of, like, just not really connecting with people. And I remembered this clubhouse and how, you know, the shame of coming back, when I was still drinking, like, really was debilitating. I didn't think I could ever walk through these doors again, but I just knew this is where I needed to come to be sober, to stay sober. I needed this family, this fellowship, where I already have some roots, and there was no shame. I didn't feel the shame. I felt eagerness to get back. I felt it was so worth it. So I rush back here with the only plan that I'm going to come to that 6:30 a.m. meeting. I'm going to go to outpatient right after that. Then I'm going to hit a 5:30 meeting or the 8 p.m. meeting. And or just meeting marathon, really. Like, I clung to the fellowship for fear of relapse. Not long after that, I chose a sponsor that I'm still working with, and we actually just completed the steps, and I'm continuing to work them on a new 4-step, and it's raw. I just see my selfishness all over the place. But I'm so glad to have this consistent relationship. Oh man, what time is it? Okay. Okay, good. I thought it was 6:30. We're just getting to sleeping. So this is the first time I went through the steps fully with a sponsor consistently, meeting her face to face once a week at least, reading through the big book together as thorough as possible. 4 steps took way too long, but I did it. Finished all the amends I possibly could have. There are still some out there that haven't got back to me. And that was... That ebbed and flowed. I would have these spurts of I'm going to do a bunch of amends this week. And then I would not do any for 1 month, and I would be miserable. So, yeah, that has been an immense difference, is the steps, consistent with a sponsor. Also, throughout my sobriety, there has been a sprinkling of fun things. Before I even had a year sober, I was elected to be an event chair for something called WikiPaw, the Wisconsin Conference of Young People in AA, and I'm so fond of that conference because it saved my ass. I was on a committee for the year before the conference and helps assemble these events. But it gave me a responsibility. I had to learn how to show up. I had to learn how to shut my mouth and deal with personalities. I learned more about the traditions than ever. The fellowship and the unity, seeing those people on such a consistent basis and communicating with them constantly, often more than I desired, but I was genuinely so happy to have that family. And I give a lot of credit to my sobriety to that service commitment. I also had a service commitment up until 2 weeks ago as a GSR at my home group of the young people's meeting here, Thursdays at 8 p.m. And I would not have taken that role on if it weren't for my sponsor challenging me, encouraging me, and highly suggesting to me. I learned so much about the structure of AA as a whole, and the District 20 meeting that meets every month, the last Tuesday of the month at St. Stephen's Church in Monona, 6:30. Anybody can come, and lately, all kinds of people who aren't even GSRs or just random people from the group, from AA, are coming to ask questions and to hear what is going on in our region. And every time I go, it just makes me realize, whoa, we're making a difference here in the community. This stuff is really happening. Like 12 steps is all over the city, and I come back with a load of opportunities for people to become part of service. So being that messenger was super fun, super frustrating too, but I got so much out of that. And so home group that I chose, I used to come in to that meeting. I would you know, come right on time and leave early, and I would like hide in the corner and draw in my notebook. I couldn't even look up. Like, at least at the 6:30 meeting, I would kind of, like, look at the people when they would share, but this, like, there's something about, I was so intimidated by these young people. I had never, I guess, been around them sober. I don't know, like, usually, like, the young people I was getting smashed with, I had to numb so that I wasn't, like, obsessing about what you think of me, but I stayed in my notebook drawing, and I kept coming back, and you know, that home group, I don't even know how long I was a part of it, a while. I think most of this last year. And I have just seen how important it is to keep showing up. You know, that group especially doesn't have a lot of women. And, of course, I want to be like, well, I need a group that will help me and better my sobriety. I need to be around really sober women. But I need to remember that the meetings are for giving back and to helping the newcomer. And there's always newcomers at those young people meetings. And they're for all ages, so please. I hope you can make it. So, what else? I guess I'm touching on the three legacies. We have recovery, unity, and fellowship?
Service.
I already talked about service. Okay, fellowship. I touched on a little bit with Wikipaw, but I want to emphasize more that fellowship was the last thing I wanted when I came in. I wanted answers to fix my problems. I wanted a cure for my pain. And if you don't have a solution that I can tangibly take home with me tonight, I don't really want to spend time with you. Like, why would I want to go get pizza and, like, hang out? And I kept that closed mind until I tried it. We went to Ian's. And I didn't know anybody, and I, like, that was so, such a fearful experience to, like, show up. Are they even here? Like, are they even going to be here? Will they even realize that I was at the meeting? Like, they're going to think, who's this weird girl sitting down? But I was embraced. I realized there were others that didn't know people much either. And then I started regularly going to fellowship, and noticing that whenever I saw those people, like, at a meeting or something, I would have that sense of, like, they were familiar to me. Mm-hmm. And then I found myself, it was easier to call those people when stuff was really going wrong. Because, like, they were familiar enough. They were in my world enough to where it was a little bit safe to take a chance and let them know, hey, I'm struggling today. So that was pretty huge in the beginning. The balance, I'm still working on. In the beginning, I was, like, all about service, all about fellowship, and really didn't know how to slow down. And it ebbs and flows. Honestly, right now, I could probably pick up my game and step into action a little more than I am. So I'm learning that balance every day. And because of sobriety, I have options and good things going on in my life. Like, I just started school, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to be getting an awesome job really soon. And so immediately I was like, okay, those things need to go first, because, like, finally I'm becoming an adult and I have, like, you know, a career path. So I should put all of my energy into that, because I missed out for many years on, like, doing adult-like things like this. I need to make up for it. So I'm working on still prioritizing, I guess, yeah. What else do I want to share? Yeah, so right now, since my sponsor and I finished the big book, she suggested that we go through the traditions. I wasn't wildly excited about that, but now that we have had our first session, we got through some of Tradition 1, I am really eager for this, because I have a lot of questions, and I guess I'm in this point of my recovery where I just really want to own what I believe by dissecting it and understanding, like, well, why do we do it this way? And why is this pertinent to me? And that sounds so selfish, but I'm learning to maybe, I think I'm growing. So, like, certain things that were working for me in the beginning are kind of not, like, working. Like, going to tons and tons and tons of meetings. I am finding that that's not super healthy for me today. And I'm really trying to focus on, like, relationships, like, one-on-one relationships with other AAs. And, because I remember it was so easy to run to a meeting instead of call someone. I would do that day after day. Like, it was just too vulnerable and intimate to, like, meet face to face or call someone and really be honest with what I'm struggling with. It was much easier to hide out in a meeting. And a meeting always helped. It always got me out of that funk or that craze or whatever. And sometimes I would, you know, be able to connect with someone after. But there were many times I would check that off, like, oh, I got my meeting, I'm good, and, you know, not really connect with someone, but I'm okay because I got my meeting in. And I got into kind of like a works mentality. Like, I must be doing okay because I'm doing this. And, you know, for a while, especially, like, with the WikiTalk thing, I was feeling really important. Like, I got this big job, and everyone loves these events. Like, I'm awesome. And when that went away, that service commitment, I had to really wrestle with, like, my identity. Like, am I what I do, or am I just me, Erica, another person trying to make a go at this sober life? And honestly, I could say, stepping down from the GSR position, I've noticed kind of like, oh, maybe I was kind of wrapping my identity a bit there in the service work. So I'm hoping I can still be able to follow these principles with still knowing like who I am, that it's not what I do. And I had another thought about that. kind of blanking. It's a bit hot in this box. Oh, and Pam was saying, it's hard to hug you.
Yes.
And I was like, man, when I came into AA for the first time, I didn't think about wearing this, but I wanted you to, like, you know, stay a little bit of a distance away from me. I was hard. You guys softened me. Really, the love of you guys has softened me, especially, like, I just have to give kudos to the 6:30 a.m. people, because I didn't realize, like, how much you cared for me until I would, like, pop in every once in a while, or, like, see one of you, and just, like, the sheer joy over your faces, like, it didn't occur to me that I meant something, like, and that I was memorable, but that love definitely softened me, and like how Tony was talking about the performance, it was my first time ever performing, like, kind of formally, and I wouldn't have wanted it any other place. Because the love and support I got, it just, like, melted me. Yeah, this compassion for one another, it's unreal. And it's helped me to forgive myself so much. Still on that journey, but I get reminded whenever I come back to you guys. I think, what else do I want to say? You know, I don't think I have a whole lot more. This life is a gift, and I do have to keep reminding myself that, and, I have a practice that I do where at night I write down my gifts of the day, and I guess it's like a gratitude list, but I like to be unique, and it clears my vision when I see the good, and it's real. Like, these are tangible, real things that occurred in my day that, you know, AA's stopping into my work on accident. Like, they didn't know I worked there, but God knew I needed a little bit of a lifting. I'm so grateful to be here. Thanks for listening, and keep coming back.